Hello everyone, I'm Divya Shekhar and this is From the Bookshelves of Forbes India.
A few months ago, N.R. Narayan Murthy, the co-founder of IT company Infosys, stirred the hornet's nest when he said that youngsters in India should ideally work 70 hours a week. The debates, conversations and memes sparked by that one comment still live on in social media. But as our guest on today's episode shares, Mr. Murthy was merely talking about what worked for him in his personal journey of entrepreneurship. More on that later. Today, we have a free-flowing and anecdote-filled conversation coming up with author Chitra Banerjee Divakaruni, whose latest book, An Uncommon Love, explores the early life of Narayan Murthy and Sudha Murthy. Through the prism of their enduring partnership, Chitra decodes their individual personalities, trying to understand what makes them the people that they are today. She narrates the individual milestones of their respective careers, the challenges of setting up Infosys, the journey of the company right up to its IPO, and how the passion and drive to build Infosys, working long hours, chasing the dream, often came at the cost of family. It's a tale of entrepreneurship, of opening the doors of opportunities for others, and of how two individuals, who are icons of our generation, persisted against all odds. So Chitra, you've earned your stripes as a writer with books rooted in history and mythology. You offer a feminist lens to the Mahabharata and the Ramayana through your books, The Palace of Illusions and Garden of Enchantments, respectively. So this book, An Uncommon Love, seemed to me like a very different sort of book for you to take up. How did this idea happen? Like, how did the idea for the book happen and why did you decide to take it up?
You are right. It's a very different book and it was a very different writing experience. And at first, this happened because the publisher at Juggernaut, she approached me and she said, we would love to have a book with the Murthys, and they have not okayed it so far with anyone else, but you know, they feel that you would do a good job, and Mr. Murthy especially has read and enjoyed Palace of Illusions, and he feels that this would be a good project. And I said to her, but I don't write nonfiction. So you know, I had to, and then you know, I knew, of course, about the Murthys, and I actually knew the Murthys because I had gone to school many years back with Sudha's brother. I think on both sides, there was a trust. Yes, with Srinivas and in Berkeley. And so on both sides, there was a trust that I felt they would open up and tell me, you know, not only the truth, but the truth that had not been told before, stories that they had not shared about themselves with anyone. And they felt that I didn't have any agenda, that I really wanted to bring out their story. And overall, most of all, I felt that this would be an inspiring story, not only for entrepreneurs, but for people of all backgrounds, not only young people who are starting something or starting a relationship, but also for people of all ages, because, you know, there's things that we learn from the Murthys in this book, both things that they did right and the mistakes they made. They were very generous in sharing a lot of mistakes and problematic moments and even like funny moments with me. And so I felt really good that I could really shine a light on them that had not been done before.
Right. So why call it The Uncommon Love?
Because it is at the root of it a love story. It's about how Sudha and Murthy meet, fall in love, and continue to love each other in spite of big differences, differences of opinions, differences of personality, differences in their vision of life. As in the book, there's a portion where Murthy is telling Sudha, I love the fact that you are an optimist. You always see the glass as half full, but I always see the glass as half empty, and therefore I must go in search of the jug so I can keep filling the glass. So they were very different, and that caused a lot of potential frictions and even actual frictions, but their love was the kind that helped them through it. Their love was not only love in the romantic sense of it, but a sense of appreciation of each other's differences,
right,
and respect for each other in spite of their differences, and always, always having each other's back. So that's an uncommon love, right? The other part of the uncommon love is the love that they both had for the idea that they wanted to create Infosys, they wanted to create jobs, they wanted to make India a world player in this field, which India was not at that time.
Yeah.
So that love for their vision and later for their philanthropic vision is an uncommon love also.
Right.
And together, they kind of, you know, entered into that love affair together.
Right. In fact, is that why you chose to focus on their early life? Because is there a lot known about, you know, their contributions and their story, you know, after Infosys was formed? So what was the idea behind focusing extensively on their early lives and the early days of Infosys and, you know, that kind of things? And even if, and even when you do talk to them about the stories, like, for example, the story of how Sudha Murthy got a job at Telco, her being the only woman engineer on the factory floor in Pune, you know, those were stories that in bits and pieces that we'd heard. So as a writer writing this, what was your, you know, thought process, and how do you piece this together in a way that it doesn't seem all too familiar?
Yeah, so that's one of the reasons I wanted to focus on the early years. And that was the project that, you know, we had decided on right up front, because the later years, yes, once they became famous, there were many interviews, people were looking into their lives. So it's, you know, so I didn't want to rehash what is already known. Also, I wanted to show what is it that led to their success. So there are stories here about their grandparents, there's stories here about their parents, positive stories, but also painful, negative stories, like when, you know, Mr. Murthy is hit by his father and, you know, he's hit so hard, he flies across the room, he cuts his forehead on a steel, edge of a steel trunk. He'd never told that story to anyone. And I was so touched that he would share that with me and what he learned from it, which is he learned never to be violent, and he, especially towards his children, but he really learned that violence is never the answer. So those are the moments that I want to bring out in this story, because they show us, I think, the making of these two people, these two people who later have become icons, but what shaped them.
How much time did you get to spend with them through this process?
It was a lot of time, because I only do one book at a time. So this was my total focus. Took us about 2 years. First of all, we did a lot of email interviews where I said, you know, I had questions for them, and they were very generous with their time. They wrote me back answers. They wrote me, like, I don't know, pages and pages of information that they sent to me. And then we started doing Zoom interviews. And in between, I'd follow up questions more on email. But the final part, which I felt was important, and they agreed, is that we have to be face to face. So my husband and I went and stayed with them in Bangalore for quite a while. And all that time I was interviewing them, you know, my phone was always on recording, and their son Rohan came over, and we'd have these, we'd really have these natural conversations out of which I would get a lot. And so I'd prompt them, but then they would go into other things that their memory just naturally brought up. So I felt that that was the most important part of the process. I also did interview the extended family, all of Sudha's siblings and their children as well, some in person and some on Zoom. And so I got a good sense of, especially when Sudha was growing up, what she was like as a now that, you know, we see that later in her.
Yeah. Did you also get to speak with the other Infosys founders about...
I mean, I know some of them and I met all of them, but we decided this was very much a personal kind of thing.
Yeah.
So we would just stick to actually, most of it is Sudha and Murthy's memories then family memories. So it was going to be a very personal take.
Right. You know, you as a writer are, you know, are always drawn to strong women characters. We've seen that in all your books, you know, right from Sister of My Heart to Mistress of Spices to Palace of Illusions and The Last Queen. Is that also why in this book, as I read it, Sudha Murthy's narrative seems to feature more heavily or more in detail here, or is that you got more time with her and her side of the family? Because I felt that as I was reading the book, it was Sudha Murthy who came up, you know, like really alive for me.
Like, yeah, well, you know, as you pointed out, my heart is always more towards the women's stories, especially women who do exceptional things and go through exceptional difficulties. I mean, I hope, I do think I've given Mr. Murthy a lot of space, but a lot of times Sudha's stories are larger than life. Mm-hmm. Just the difficulties that she underwent, being the first woman student. Mm-hmm. How old was she? She was like 16 years old. Yeah. She comes into the classroom the first day and they put ink all over the bench. I mean, how did that feel? Mm-hmm. Nowadays, we often can't even imagine it because it's become so common, right? But she opened the way for women later so that it would become so common to go to engineering college and we don't even think about it. So her stories have a special resonance. How she went for that interview with Telco, and that story is known, but how she felt about it, some of that was not known.
Yeah.
And then after having gotten the job, I mean, she didn't want the job.
Yeah.
She had this very difficult conversation with her father. He said, you know, you've opened a door for women. If you don't take up this job, that door will close. It will slam shut. They won't even interview other women after this because they'll say, see, this is what happens. So she had to give up her MIT dream.
Yeah.
So, and that, you know, as a woman, I really resonated with those stories. Yeah.
I mean, that choice was a really difficult choice to make because I think, you know, Mr. Murthy points out later in the book, none of the Infosys co-founders ever had an opportunity to be a research assistant at MIT, but you do. You've got that opportunity. So there is this very interesting moment in the book where Sudha Murthy wants to join Infosys. And Narayan Murthy tells her that, no, we can't. We can't be in the same company together. If you want, I can take a step back and you can run it yourself. But we can't be in that together. Can you recollect that moment of our book?
That was a very dramatic moment for, you know, it is a dramatic story, but it was also a dramatic moment in the interview because I could see that that was still like a painful memory for both of them. Mm-hmm. And you know, Mr. Murthy was telling me, I knew that she was smarter than all of us. I told her she's smarter than me, but we can't become a husband and wife company. And then Sudha said, yeah, and I guess I was, if I were to do it again, I would have argued with him further.
Yeah.
But at that point, he said it and I just accepted that we cannot be husband and wife company, just because at that time the family companies were not run very, professionally. But I think the important moment of that story is that Mr. Murthy says to her, okay, and I think, you know, what they shared with me, which is nice, that she was very upset for like 3 days, she's not talking to Mr. Murthy, and he realizes the pain she's going through. And that's when he says to her, really, meaning it, you can take over Infosys and I'll handle, you know, the home, the children, the supplemental income. And then I loved how she said to me that that was really a fond moment. She said, I really thought about it. So she took another few days to think about it. Hmm. And then she said, and I said to myself, I can run Infosys. I don't have any doubts, but can he run the family? The children. And so she made that decision. So ultimately, it was, in some ways for her, a tragic decision, but it was also an empowering one because she made that decision. She could have chosen to make the other decision and head Infosys, and she would have done it very well. I feel she would have done it really well.
Right. So you're saying that she didn't have a doubt with respect to her ability to run Infosys or the fact that she's perfectly capable to do that. There was no self-doubt there, but the very fact that, she felt that Mr. Murthy would fall short of domestic and caregiving responsibilities, that she would do very well.
I think she was right, because later in, as we interviewed and the children entered the story, Mr. Murthy was very strict with the children and sometimes quite impatient with them. So I think Sudhaji, she knew that. She knew that and made the right choice.
Right.
Yeah.
In fact, I think what was Mr. Murthy's reservations about family businesses at that point?
Well, he had been with two businesses. Well, he had been with Putney, with PCS, and he'd had a really bad experience with them, which is why he quit Putney. And Mrs. Murthy had in Pune been with another family run business, and she had seen how the supervisors were just supervisors because they were members of the family. They had no they had no technical expertise to be supervising her. And so they both knew that that's what happened in a lot of things. But later Mrs. Murthy told me, and I put it in the book, that I should have fought against it, because I should have said to him, but we don't have to be like that. We can do something different. But, in hindsight, we see a lot of things that we don't see.
There's an interesting short anecdote in the book about how Mr. Murthy interviewed with Wipro when Mr. Azim Premji wanted to start a technology division and was looking for someone to head it. The Murthys were then living in Santa Cruz in Mumbai, and he was working for Putney Computers. The opportunity was brought to him by their friend Prasanna, who was at the time the HR head of Wipro. Why don't you read that out for us?
Over a sumptuous dinner, Prasanna told them that Azim Premji, the chairman of Wipro, was planning to start a technology division and was looking for someone to head it. Prasanna suggested that Murthy apply for the job. "You'll be perfect for it," he assured Murthy. He promised to get him an interview with Premji. Sudha was excited by the idea. She said, "If you get the job, maybe we could move into a noise-free apartment," because you remember they're living right off of the railroad tracks. Soon, Prasanna scheduled an interview with Premji for Murthy. Murthy did not have any formal wear, nor did he think such attire was necessary for a technical interview. He showed up in a clean shirt and a pair of brown pants. Premji, who was immaculately dressed in an expensive suit with a foreign cut, was very polite, but he was clearly a little taken aback. He took Murthy to the Willington Club for a luncheon interview. Murthy had never been inside such a fancy venue in India and was a little awed by his surroundings, including the many pieces of cutlery arranged beside his plate. He could see that his world was very different from that of Premji, who was clearly from a very privileged background. He answered all of Premji's questions accurately and smartly, but perhaps Premji sensed his unease with his surroundings. Perhaps it made him feel that Murthy would not fit in with the other sophisticated heads of departments. He did not offer Murthy the job. Years later, Murthy would learn that Premji regretfully referred to this decision as one of his gravest errors of judgment.
There's another job that Mr. Murthy did not take. It's at Hindustan Unilever. There is this chapter in the book which talks about how he received an appointment letter from Tarun Sheth, the head of HR at Unilever at the time. But when Mr. Narayan Murthy learned that the company used separate toilets for higher ranking officials and other employees, he refused to take up the job there. And I quote this line from the book. "A certain class of employees, Unilever had separate toilets because a certain class of employees did not keep the toilets clean for the officers, particularly the foreigners, to use. And that did not go well with Mr. Murthy," right?
Yeah, that's an important incident in the book that you refer to. In fact, he gives up a very good job offer with much higher salary. And that's the reason. And in fact, interestingly, after he tells them why and he says no, they do change that policy and make their toilets open to everyone. And while we're on the subject of toilets, so they took us to see their old house, which is right next to their new house. And he pointed out they only had two bedrooms. They had one bathroom. And he pointed out and he said, you know, I always cleaned the bathroom because I did not feel other people should clean my dirt. Why? I'm a human being. They're a human being. And that kind of level of compassionate humanity, I think, really influenced him. They also took me to Infosys. And indeed, all the bathrooms are open to everyone. And they know, like, I was really impressed that Sudhaji, I went into the ladies' toilets with Sudhaji to use the toilet. And she knew all of the employees, like the toilet cleaners, by name. And she was saying hello to them and asking about their children. And so, and, you know, I was in the toilet. It wasn't like she was doing it because I was there. Obviously, they have had this conversation many times before. She was asking about their children. She knew their names. And I thought, you know, there's just something there about respecting humanity, respecting all people. And I think that's kind of, and it just comes naturally to them.
Right.
Maybe because of how they were, I don't think it's even how they were brought up, because they were brought up in traditional Hindu homes where, yes, you know, some things are touchable and some things are untouchable. But they did not have that. They did not have that at all.
Right. And how did Mr. Murthy describe the early days of setting up Infosys?
Oh, you know, he told me something interesting, which, again, I don't think he has discussed anywhere. He said it was a passion. It was like an obsession, right? Mm. He could not stop thinking about it. He would lie awake at night. He was working at Putney. He had a very good job, lots of money, lots of perks, you know, lots of smart people working under him, many of whom would go on to Infosys with him.
Yeah.
But he couldn't sleep at night. He had this dream. I must do something for India. I must grow the entrepreneurial world of India. He couldn't forget that. And he couldn't sleep at night. So, you know, it was something that just was with him. And Sudha would wake up and he was sitting up in bed and just thinking about this. And so finally she said, you got to do it because it'll just drive you crazy otherwise. So I'm going to support you. You go ahead and do it. If you fail, you fail.
Correct.
He had another dream.
Right.
Then later on, he would have another dream. And I think this was after he had started Infosys. And it was like he was in space here. And he told me he'd never told anyone else this also. He was in space and he was drifting off in this darkness of space and there was nothing. There was nothing because he was moving into uncharted territories. At that point, during the license Raj, there were no companies like Infosys. And it was scary, right? So people don't think of Mr. Murthy as someone who got scared, but he did. And that's what makes him human.
Right.
He was terrified, but he still continued.
In fact, you've mentioned how Mr. Murthy took an unusual decision while dividing up equity at Infosys. He kept 30% of the equity for himself, gave N.S. Raghavan 19%, Chris Gopalakrishnan and Nandan Nilekani got 15% each, and K. Dinesh, S.D. Shibulal and Ashok Arora received 7% each. Such an act was unheard of at the time, is what you write.
Very much, very much unheard of. In fact, their own family and friends came up to them when they were deciding this. They said, are you crazy? And they would talk to Sudha and said, talk to him. He's doing, you know, he's making a stupid financial decision.
Right.
Sudha is like, you know what? That's his decision to make. I'm not going to say anything. I support his decision.
Right.
So, you know, everybody was telling them not to do it. But he felt he was, you know, he was really influenced by socialist, communist philosophy, like, you know, the very Nehruvian, let's share the wealth kind of vision. And even when he decided to become a quote-unquote capitalist, he was going to be a compassionate, in his own terms, compassionate capitalist. So, and right. I'll tell you what I learned after I talked to them is an interesting thing. People are like, wow, he was so generous. Wow, he gave away so much money. But really, money didn't matter that much to him. That right. was not the reason he was doing this. Mm-hmm. Even now, they live very simply. They could, of course, afford to live. But they're not doing it because we want to show everyone that we are going to live simply. Those things just don't matter to them.
Right.
You know? And I really thought that that was amazing, that it's a great quality to not be owned by the things that we own.
I want to read out another passage about how Mr. Murthy's life at home and his relationship with Sudha Murthy changed as Infosys grew. This chapter talks about how the relationship that Mr. Murthy saw his parents share left an impression on him. And although he did not want to take those qualities forward in his own relationship with Ms. Sudha Murthy, he sort of got back to following the same thing as life got busier. So I want to quickly read out these few lines from the book which stayed back with me. This starts with the mention of Mr. Narayan Murthy's father, Mr. Rama Rao. So here goes. Rama Rao was caring and dutiful towards his wife and offspring. He would, for instance, nurse the children when they were sick and take his wife to the cinema, but would rarely show any outward signs of affection towards her. This marital model left a strong impression on the young Murthy. Although his relationship with Sudha was very unlike this, especially in the early years, and they spent much time discussing important issues and advising each other, as things got very busy and stressful with Infosys, Murthy would find himself reverting to this old template where he took care of the quote-unquote outside world and expected Sudha to handle, in quotes, home issues. And like his father, he would have little time for companionship. Instead, he kept whatever worries and fears he had, and the loneliness they engendered, largely to himself, because as a child, he had learned that that was what a man was supposed to do.
Yeah, this was, this passage I was able to write only after much discussion when he opened up. And even, I think the Murthys learned a lot about themselves as they discussed things. Because, you know, we do things, but we don't often think about why am I doing this? What is the conditioning behind it? Right? Mr. Murthy did not want to become a father like his father or a husband like his father was. Mm-hmm. But our early childhood conditionings go very deeply into us. So when things became very hectic, he kind of reverted to that model unthinkingly.
Right.
And so there are parts in the book that show us that Sudha was very lonely when he was gone for a lot of the time. And she wasn't the kind of person who would go and complain to someone else. So she had to keep it inside herself. She couldn't even complain to the children. They were already missing their father. They were, you know, they had their own stresses as they were going to school and all that. So she became someone who kept a lot of that to herself. And so later, as we were discussing, she said, yeah, I was very lonely for many of the years that I gave, my companionship, I gave it up for Infosys. So, I think they both realize it. And that's an important part of the book. I think if people are thinking of becoming entrepreneurs, they need to realize that these are challenges that will arise. Maybe we can create a plan and decide how to deal with it. Because later, the children, they do love their dad very much because, I talk to them separately and they do. But they do feel, they'll say to him, and they have a very open communication. So they'll say to him, Dad, you were never there when we were growing up. And Akshita has said clearly, Dad, you were not really my dad. Thank goodness my grandfather, Sudha's father, was there. He was my real dad. You were just my bonus dad. You never came to any of my school events except for graduation. And, those are the sacrifices that the Murthys had to make. And right. I think entrepreneurs, their families do have to make those sacrifices and need to think about them upfront.
Right. In fact, I also want to talk to you about Sudha Murthy's manner of addressing conflicts and confrontation, be it at the workplace or in personal life. Like you said, she often kept it to herself. She had a particular goal in mind, but did not protest or voice out her opinions or address the daily things that happened to her that she was not comfortable with, be it in her engineering college days or her daily working, at the factory floor at Telco in Pune. She had this whole grin and bear it approach. What is your take on that?
Yeah. So as I talked to her about it, I recognized she's a very patient person.
Mm.
Okay. So if really she is pushed to the corner, she will protest, right? But she's a very patient person. So she sometimes, a lot of times she felt, let me continue behaving professionally and see if it changes things around. Mm. And it did change things around, both on the telco floor, where, the management became aware, and also slowly the workers also started coming around because, she would and genuinely care for them, ask about their families and so forth. And, if they didn't want her to do certain things, even if she felt that was not right, she wasn't going to battle it up front, mm-hmm. because she knew more harm can happen with that than with being patient and strategic. So in that way, I think she's much more like Sita than Draupadi, because Sita also, she's very strong, Sita. She won't put up with nonsense, but she's not going to argue and fight and, throw a tantrum and all that. All of which Draupadi was quite happy to do.
Yeah.
So I think, in some ways, she's a much more mature model of someone who stands up for what she believes in. She stands up for what she believes in. She's not going to create a big fuss, because sometimes she realizes that does more harm than good.
Right. I also
even
noticed
with Murthy, she wouldn't fight. She would give him the silent treatment until she herself calmed down, when they could have a conversation.
Right. When you write books like this, nonfiction, people that are still around, you're talking to them, they are your primary source material. It for writers, often there's a danger for the book to turn hagiographical. So was that a concern that you had? And, how did you decide to sort of deal with that?
Yeah. So, because so much of the material is given to me, right? And I needed to make sure that I stayed true to those sources. But there was still a lot of space for me to use my creative imagination, because I'm a very visual writer. So I would imagine these scenes. So I'm imagining the scene where, Mr. Murthy's father throws him across the room. I'm imagining the scene where Sudha is sitting on the steps of MIT and she's crying because it just strikes her that she gave up this great opportunity. I'm imagining the scene where Rohan, who was a very naughty boy, he jumps off of the car, from the top of the car, he jumps off saying, "I'm Superman," and he immediately dislocates his elbow. Now he's screaming in pain. Mr. Murthy is taking him to the hospital and he's crying. Right? Mr. Murthy is crying. Because he just can't stand to see his child in pain. So these are all very visual scenes. I saw them as I wrote them. And I'm hoping that comes across.
Right.
The drama of them, the character revelation that comes through them. I hope that comes across.
Right. When you spend so much time, with people talking to them about their lives, their feelings and why they took certain decisions, why they are the way they are, and then you see that there's this other side. Like, for example, Mr. Murthy's 70-hour work week. became quite a talking point. It still is. Did you discuss that with them? Did it ever come up that this there's this whole other universe where does it really need to be like this? That kind of a thing that's come up.
Right. So that happened much later. So that's not as the 70-hour week statement happened. So it's not really in the scope of the book. But I think one of the things I learned as I was discussing the book or discussing things that will go in the book that is relevant to what you're talking about is, first of all, Murthyji never asks people to do what he himself hasn't done. Right. Mm. So he's talking 70-hour weeks. He went 80-hour, 90-hours week. Right. So he is saying, listen, basically what he's saying, listen, this worked for me. I'm suggesting that you do this because it can really work for you and change your life around. Now, did he suffer for it? Yes. Did the family suffer because of it? Yes. I think the book brings out that. Yes, the 70-hour week or the 80-hour week does have its costs. But it depends. You know, it depends on where your passions lie. So I think it is a very good idea to balance our lives. And Sudhaji is an example of that in the book. She balances being a writer, being a teacher, being a mom, and also being willing to ask for help from her extended family. That's an important part of the book. Yeah. And I hope it will encourage other young people who are serious about their careers, their visions, to make use of that. Because I think, you know, we are one of the few cultures left in the world where we have this deep extended family connection, and we absolutely should make use of it. You know, definitely. We should make use of it. But yes, the 70-hour week had a lot of expenses, right? Mr. Murthy did have to pay it. But he said, and I see this, he was a person obsessed with a goal. And I see this as a writer, because a lot of times when I'm writing a book, I'm obsessed with it. And I do neglect my family. I mean, I feel bad that I am neglecting my family. I'm like, there's food in the fridge. Make yourself sandwiches. Okay, don't disturb me. So every vision has a price. You know? And what we want sometimes, and I don't blame anyone for it, is we want both. We want the success, and we want the family life, and we want fun times, and we want everything. But the truth of the matter is, maybe we can't have everything. Yeah. And then we do have to make compromises. And he wasn't willing to compromise his vision. As a writer, I'm not willing to compromise my vision. When I'm writing deep into a book, I will neglect other things. And I'm very appreciative that my family has allowed me to do that, right? Mm-hmm. Otherwise, I'd be cooking a lot and there would be no books. It's not the life I wanted. So there are sacrifices. He was willing to make them. I'm willing to make them. I think there are many of us who care about what we do, and we make those sacrifices. Is it a perfect world? No, it isn't.
Right. That's a really good way to put it. And on that note, I think we'll have to, you know, come to the end of this podcast. It was wonderful speaking with you, Chitra. This was, I really enjoyed this conversation.
I loved your questions. Thank you so much. You had great questions.
Thank you. Thanks a lot.
So this was Chitra Banerjee Divakaruni, and we discussed her latest book, An Uncommon Love, which explores the early life of Narayan Murthy and Sudha Murthy. I hope you enjoyed this episode. I'm Divya Shekhar. See you next time.